review for the Shoe Workers Oral History Project. The date is May 16th, 2008. We're at Courtemanche Insurance Agency in Lewiston, Maine. This is Andrea Lumgier, and I am interviewing Dick Courtemanche. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did an excellent job. Very well.
And could you tell me where and when you were born?
I was born in Lewiston, 1945, in Lewiston, Maine.
And is that where you grew up?
Yes, in Lewiston, Maine. Or I'm one of 10 children. Okay, I'm the second oldest. We had a small little farm on College Road in Lewiston, Maine. And my dad was a shoe factory worker, hand sewer. And from there, we all expected to be hand sewers, follow the dad's trade, which we did.
Now, were both your parents from the Lewiston area?
My dad was born in Canada, so was my mother. My mother moved to Rumford, Maine, and my dad had to go work in the woods back in the 30s. He'd walk from Canada to Jackman and work in the woods all summer. And I think he used to walk to Rumford. That's where he met my mother.
Hmm.
They got married in Lewiston and stayed there ever since.
Wow. Now, did he ever talk about why he decided to come to the U.S. from Canada?
Jobs. An opportunity in Lewiston, Maine to work, you know, in a shoe factory, probably, and feel very comfortable, because in Lewiston, that in those days, there was probably 90% all French. He couldn't speak a word of English, neither my mother. So by doing this, so he was comfortable living here and working here.
And you said he came in the 30s?
I guess he went to, when I heard it, in the 30s, moved to, I'm trying to think now, when did he move to Lewiston, Maine? I think in 1940.
Okay. I was wondering if it was before or after the 37 shoe strike.
No, it was after the shoe strike.
Yeah. Did your dad thought that probably the kids would go into the shoemaking?
That's right. It was, my dad did it, his brothers did it, my mother's brothers were hand sewers also, so I thought the whole world was hand sewing, working a shoe factory. But because of this, back in those days, if you were crafty with your hands, you could make quite a bit of money. He supported 10 kids, the only one working a shoe factory, hand sewing.
So it was piecework?
Piecework. For a person, now, it's hard to explain piecework. Back in those days, if you would do, well, he used to do, I guess he was a good hand sewer. He used to do about 30 pairs a day at $1 a pair in the 50s and 60s. So he was making about $30 a day, okay? Supporting 10 kids, he had to. But, the job, how do I say it? If you work harder, you make more money. Now, in comparison to what people were making back in those days, today's economy, it's like making about $60,000 a year. Back in those days, doing
right.
The same type of work, because the cost of living was much less.
So that was a really good...
good paying job. Yeah. It was clean. It was inside. The weather was always the same. It was fun. It was fun, because when he taught me, I went to a local shoe factory. It was nice, because you don't have to compete with the weather. And it was a comfortable job.
And so... your father taught you how to hand sew?
Myself and four of my brothers, yeah, doing the same thing. I had a God-given talent. I was young. And I used to, because it was piecework, you could race with your people. In equivalent to today's rate, if I would be doing the same thing today, what I was doing then, I'd be making approximately around $80,000 a year. Hand sewing in a local shoe factory, no education, didn't need to. As long as you're good with your hands, you had it's a skill as well as crafty. And the job itself is, was fun. Enjoyed it. And the sad part of it, and then all of a sudden, shoe factory started moving out, and they were going out of state, out of the country. So the skill was moved out to Mexico. A lot of people in Mexico, a lot of hand sewers would go to Mexico and teach them how to hand sew. Myself and my dad worked for the same factory, which was doing Bostonian shoes, because it was well known, very high grade shoes. You'd make good money. Also, he hand sewed for, so did I, for Billing Shoe, Sebago Mark, Bostonian Shoe, and L.L. Bean. Mesa, they're still doing it over there. So it's, what if you go from one factory to another factory, it's the same job.
Right.
The letter was the same. So the quality of the person and how fast he can produce the job, because it's piecework, the moment he'd make. So hand sewers would shift, go from one factory to the next. It's nothing to pack up his tools, go from one factory to the next. Why would he want to do that? Because from one factory to the next is the, they'd pay a little more per pair for one factory. So it doesn't make a difference where you work.
Now, were there hand sewers in the area that were well known as being?
Myself, because of my, an average hand sewer back in those days, in the 60s, would probably do about 20 pairs a day. A good hand sewer would do around 30 pairs a day. As he's supposed to consider to be fast. A real fast guy, we're talking, you know, because 35 to 40 pairs a day. I would do around 60 pairs a day for many years. Myself and Vernon Daigle, locally, were probably the fastest hand sewers that was unheard of. We did it because it came natural that other people would do unnatural. So he was a good man. I learned from him because he used to hand sew quite a few years before me. I used to watch him. And I said, I can do the same thing. Then from there, I picked up the tricks that my dad used to show me. Then you pick up another. Then after that, I loved it. And you could make good money, uneducated. So you could do extremely well, make a good living locally in Lewiston, Maine. And that's what was wonderful.
You said you had a lot of family that were involved in the shoemaking.
That's right. My brothers, they were very fast too. And they liked it. Unfortunately, the job got scarcer, so people started leaving the shoe factory, and it was sad because you can almost see the handwriting on the wall. No job security, and factories were moving out of the country for a while. I think I was told that there was over 2,000 hand sewers in the Twin City, Lewiston, Auburn, Maine. That was incredible. Doing the same work in my factory when I used to work at Commonwealth Shoe. There was about 150 side by side doing this day in and day out. All of a sudden, they started laying people off. Gradually, they closed the factory. It was sad to see that. I was fortunate. What I had going for myself is that going to parochial school, you always learn how to sell Christmas cards and to try to make a little dollar here and there. I could speak French, and I had an opportunity. See, back in those days, if you when a shoe factory would slow down, instead of laying a lot of people off, most of the factories would tell the people, says, you do your 24 pairs, that's a good day's work, then you can go home. So at 9:30 in the morning, I was done. 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. So from 10 o'clock all day, what do? That's when I went into this business I'm doing now, selling insurance, investments. You know, so I gradually went from part-time to full-time. Mm-hmm. Took me quite a few years studying, going to school, and so on and so on. Insurance school. Here I am.
And so how many years have you been doing this?
35 years. Oh. I got 17 agents working for me full-time. So I'm doing extremely well. I won all kinds of awards, as you can see on the wall. And it's been fun. And thanks to not knowing then that the the advantage of speaking French because it was a French community. I could speak French or English. In high school, didn't need to speak English locally, but you had to learn French. So I said it came naturally to sell and understanding what people's needs are and so on and so on. This is what I am now.
That's great. Now, did any of your siblings stay in the shoe industry till the very end?
My brothers, my youngest brother, he was the 10th one, he worked for L.L. Bean. He did extremely well, but the problem he had carpal tunnel, so he had to leave. He was the last one in my family. He had to leave the shoe factory. Then he became a male nurse, went to school, and doing very well now. The unfortunate part of the job is that because you work hard, it was hard on your body, your shoulders, your fingers. My father passed away. He was 47 years old. Heart attack, cholesterol, poor diet, standing in one place all day. It didn't help, not knowing what was going on back in those days. So that was the unfortunate part. And you could see a lot of hand sewers with bursitis and shoulders because it was hard on your arms and shoulders, mm-hmm. not knowing because you had to pull a set of strings on both arms and pull it as long as hard as you can and as wide as you can. This was not knowing that, but
right.
Of course I was young, I didn't know the difference.
Now, can you talk about the process of hand sewing?
I have pictures, as a matter of fact, that I was proud of, my father. It's a taking two pieces of leather, put on, they call it a lash, which is a form, a shape of a shoe, and tack it in place with thumb tack. Then taking a string, making a hole, and stitch it together. By the time you get done, the two pieces of leather shapes the shoe, the form of, and what the another process was to take the piece, that shoe, put it in a dryer that would shrink the leather to the shape of that form. You know, it could be a size 6, size 7, size 8, size 10, depending. Now, the only thing that the rest of the factory would do is put glue on a sole and glue it on. Now the shoe's done. So it was simple, but it looked good. It was a nice looking shoe. The beauty about hand sewing on top, when you put your foot in the shoe, the shoe would mold your foot. It would be comfortable immediately because the stitching was on top. From what I can gather, the guy that really, really deserves credit, I used to hear about him, a guy by the name, he passed away a few years ago, Alden Grant. I think he passed away, he was in his 90s, mm-hmm. okay? I think he learned that watching Indians doing moccasin.
Right.
And he took it a step forward, and he said, why can't we do moccasin with a sole underneath and make it look so you can, instead of walking, it looks like a slipper, it would be comfortable, and it caught on. What happened is Bostonian shoe was well known, so they would take the best hand sewers, and it was funny because they used to ship them to, they would go to New York, all these big windows like Macy's, and demonstrate it in the window. They would sell, because people was amazed that a shoe could be done in front of them. And they would buy, it's nothing, people to watch them all day and sell 1,000 pairs in one day at Macy's. It's because just to see the quality is beautiful. They're still doing it now. Yeah. Roger Dufault is still doing it. He demonstrates in windows, different places. To see how it's done, people get so amazed. They want to buy it because it's a craft. It's not everybody can do it because it's tough on the fingers, and you need a special tool to puncture the leather and put two needles in it, interlock the stitch, go around the shoe. An average shoe would have around 60 stitches, done my hand. It's impressive. They still do it at L.L. Bean. They demonstrate it quite a bit. It makes when a person sees how it's done, they want to buy that pair. And besides that, it's a very comfortable shoe. It's sad that we don't have this anymore. Well, I'm sorry. There's still one company in town still doing it. Very expensive shoes. I think they're selling it for $500 a pair. So all the elite wears it because it's very nice, comfortable, and he uses the finest leather, calf leather, to assemble together. Makes a beautiful shoe. Yeah, it's nice. This picture of my father brings up because what he used to do to keep us going, he used to bring, back in those days, you could bring a bunch of leather at home and hand soap at home at night on weekends. So we were five kids, or we were 10 kids, five of the kids would learn how to do this at home in the cellar. He'd get paid to do it.
Right.
So that was, it was a way of starting. Yeah. So it's learning a trade, and my father would get compensated for doing this. So he could make, it's funny, I remember, I said he'd make an average of 12 pairs a case. That's $12. All of us would be hand sewing. He'd assemble it, we'd hand sew it. In an hour, the case was done. So it was nice to see. He'd be happy making money. We'd be happy learning the trade. An average hand sewer, I was told, and it's true, it would take to be a bona fide hand sewer, about 3 years, to do it right. A lot of them would try to do it, and they have special tools to observe if the shoe could stay together after the person would put his foot in it. The stitches would break down. So some people would abuse the job. And so obviously they get fired. So he'd go next door. So they do the same thing. But after a while, all the factories knew who was a good hand sewer or not. It was cute to see that. It was funny because we said, oh my God, he's trying to get a job in here. We used to call them butchers. They'd massacre the shoe. So I said, oh, my God, he ain't going to last. So we'd watch him, how long he would last until the boss would go around. He said, what kind of a shoe is that? Because the funny part is that a shoe, a good hand sewer would do 5 stitches to an inch. They call it a stitch gauge. You can measure how many stitches on that inch. You could get away for 4 1/4 to 5 stitches. A lot of them, we call them the butchers, would do 3 inches. So the shoe would done faster, but the shoe would not keep it together. It wouldn't hold. So those guys would get terminated. I stayed in the same place, but we had to learn how to do good shoes at Bostonian Shoe, because that was the ultimate shoe back in those days.
Did the process of hand sewing change at all over the
No,
time?
It's the same basic. Even now, I tried it last year, and it was fun just to see. It's just like riding a bike. You don't forget. My hands are more delicate now, but the process is the same. The only thing they do it now, it's people that wear hand sewn shoes are very expensive if it's done in the state. So they're using the finest leather. Very expensive, so it's remarkable the cost of the shoe. Back in those days, you could buy a pair of shoes for $12-$15. Now that I've seen anywhere from $400 to $500, but the quality is much better. You don't have to do as fast to make a good living now. They just want quality because it's a very selected. The people that buy it can afford it, so they want the best. You cannot have even a scratch on it.
Was there also, I mean, leather is a living thing.
It's a good point. It's funny because Alden Grant used to talk about that. So he used to sit down with you. He said, let me explain leavener. They would, the leather cow, for example, the top hat where the spine is the quality leather. Around the stomach, the belly part, you could not use that for sure because it would stretch, come back to stretch, the cow would lay down. He should explain to him, oh my God, I didn't want to listen to this stuff here, because we just want to work. So inexpensive shoes would use the...
If we were talking about the cow and the belly
okay,
part...
Okay, right, okay. So if a cow, a lot of shoes was made from the cow. But the cow or the calf, they would not use, it's funny, because you talk about that a lot, they would not use the belly for the shoe because it has to be stiff. So they use the back part. So what do you do with the other part? They would make strips of it around the opening of the shoe or else put a double layer, the two pieces of leather putting together and glue them together. Because the shoe would not stand up by itself, crazier. So, or else put the leather that the and the cutter would do this in the shoe factory. He had to know that the soft pad of the cow should be underneath the shoe. The good leather pad, so I had to explain that, would be used on the top pad, so it wouldn't cave in if the guy would put the shoe on. So. It was, he used to try to explain this, and we didn't want to hear this. We just want to get away from us so we can make money. But we had to know that. That was Alden Grant. But I could see now why he was trying to explain it because, you know, hand sewers. Some of these guys did it for 30, 40, 50 years. I know some guys are still doing it now. They've been doing it for 50 years, right after the war. They used to have all kinds of places in town to teach you how to hand sew. And the government would help these factories to teach them, give them an incentive. If you teach them, they would get compensated, the factory and the individual, until he can go on his own piecework. So, but he was probably the individual that needed a lot of credit, but nobody seemed to know that. And my dad used to talk about him all the time. He said, it was a pain in the neck, but he knew his leather. Huh, now I could see it because he did talk to me about that. I didn't want to talk to him, you know.
Right,
I'm a young guy, and he's an older guy trying to explain to me about the calf and the cow and the thighs and the leather. Blah, I don't want to hear that.
But see, that's one of the things that these oral histories do is give some recognition to those people who were...
Yeah, it was fun. The beauty about the hand sewing is because of within... 40 feet from each other, we're surrounded. We only had approximately 3 feet cubicle. So I could hear a conversation 20 feet from me about what's going on over there and so on and so on. So we knew each other very well. So this is where I used to enjoy, I got pictures of them. If a person, fun part of hand sewing is because I was competitive, we sat at a softball team in my shoe factory. Then he said, how do we compete against another? So I knew some people from other factories. Then we came out with a shoe shop league, softball league. We had up to 14 teams, different teams. Then after that, Nap Shoe was involved. Didn't have to be hand sewer, Nap Shoe. As long as you work in a shoe factory, you would compete in the softball league, and at the end of the year, who was the best team, so on. Goodyear, back in those days, was very popular, which is Bonan Shoe. Okay, so I remember we used to compete against them quite a bit. Commonwealth, we had our own team, and the stipulation is you had to work in a shoe factory. So we had 14 teams. What happened is, as the shoe factory, and I was president, I started the softball league. And we had to change the name because as the shoe factory left, other teams wanted to come in. So we changed it to Twin City Softball League. So now we picked up another, I think we had 20 teams. It was phenomenal. But so we did this. They had bowling league, a shoe factory. I started a hockey league, the shoe shop league. Okay, that was funny because the big rivalry was Car Shoe. It was funny because he used to sponsor them, you know, the nice outfits and all that stuff. They looked the best, so everybody wanted to go. All the ringers wanted to go play for them. Commonwealth Shoe, the Bostonian Shoe, and it was funny because they would pay for the ice time. Bostonian Shoe.
And where would you play?
At the Coliseum, right here, inside. We'd have our time allocated for us, and we have a league of our own, and that was fun. So I started a shoe shop league. Hockey, softball. I didn't play bowling, but it was big.
Was this in the 60s and
60s, 70s. Then it started dwindling in the 80s. But yeah, there was in the mid-70s, it was unbelievable. Even some teams from Portland, shoe shop. Sobago Mark wanted to participate in that league. They were in Westbrook because it was a big rivalry between shoe factories. And there was a lot of good athletes. See, back in those days, you were a good athlete, and the only way you could make good money is go work in a shoe factory and learn a trade. So, and that was the only good paying job around. Unless you got educated, then move out of state. And that was a sad part. Some people would move out of state.
Now, is there anything that I haven't asked you yet about shoe working, your times that you feel
The shoe working, the funny part about hand sewers, this is the Vern Daigle and I, we talk about that sometimes. He's a good friend of mine. If you were fast, and my father used to tell me, he says, if you're fast, keep your mouth shut. You're going to have a lot of jealousy. Because they think you're going to take the work away from them. I heard about it. Never happened to me because I kept my mouth shut. Slicing tires, putting sugar in your gas tank if you're too fast. When I, Hanson went down over here and I went to Freeport, to Hanso, I remember because I was known to do a lot of shoes, they all gathered around my work area and they told me, if you produce more than so many pairs, your tire is going to be slashed. So I had to control myself. I said, it's too bad. But I can see what they were talking about because they had no education. They wanted to conserve their job. Then in those days, why didn't want to do that? It's because if I was doing the work of three people, if I would slow down to their level, they'd have to hire two other guys to take my place. So they can control me. They couldn't control all three of them. That was my way of thinking. But their thing is, I can understand why they didn't want me to produce a lot of shoes because they were afraid to lose their job, So there was a lot of jealousy in the shoe factory. Hand sewing was probably the most popular. Shoe cutter was another one. That was a trade in the industry that was well known. They'd pay almost as good as hand sewing. It was noisy though. But the rest of the job, the stitching room, ladies, women would work on piecework. They deserve it. He said they'd stitch around the shoe to make it fancy. They were getting paid very well when they worked hard. So they had the same problem with the women. The women would do the stitching. It's like, stitching is like a sewing machine on clothes, but it would be on shoes. So by the time it goes from there to us, we take the shoe, put it together, you just put a sole on it, it's gone. Somebody else would polish it. So it was quite a trade. A person should go see at the LA Museum, all the tools that they are there, and they could demonstrate in front of you because I brought a lot of leather there, and it's amazing how attractive people. This is, well, they think if a shoe just fell out of the sky and that's it, but how it's made, two simple pieces of leather make a shoe, and make it fit your size. The funny part about piecework is we can observe what's coming out. Everybody wanted to hand sew a size 6, size 7, size 8. Sometimes you get size 14, size 15. Sometimes you get stuck hand sewing. So it would take you twice as long because the shoe was bigger, more stitches. So it was funny because hand sew, they'd watch what's coming out. They observe, they believe they go to the bathroom and see what's coming out, slow down accordingly or speed up accordingly. But that's the trick of the trade. Yeah. Every job has its own handicap. But all in all, it was fun to do this.
Great. Thank you very much.